Blog Talk Radio.
Get up again and smile. Get up again and smile.
Good morning and welcome to Our Black News. I'm Don Allen, my co-host. Jonathan Mason should be joining us shortly. He's been out in the streets every day, all night reporting, and he's a little hoarse this morning. That's unfortunate. But he just sent me a message and said he can't talk at all. So that's understandable. You're out there protesting, yelling, fighting for our rights, what we need, and things. Good morning, Tony Lee. How are you? Again, good morning. You're listening to Our Black News on Blog Talk Radio, and we're broadcasting live also on Zoom. A lot of stuff going on in the city these days. Last night, the protesting that was happening the day before, I made a lot of posts on social media. I watched the Foot Locker looted. And the warehouse of the Foot Locker and back stuff was just being taken out by handfuls. And so that was incredible. Currently, if you look at the Star and Tribune headline, and I'm multitasking this morning because I am by myself, but that's okay. We can do this. New fires and looting, and Governor Walz, his message to the folks doing the looting is to you need to go home. And this has been a ongoing problem with the every administration when dealing with Black American people here in the Twin Cities, you know, telling us what to do. We have to go home. We can't do this. You can't do that. If you look at the events surrounding the death of Mr. Floyd by the hands of the Minneapolis police, there's a lot of issues. One issue that I had with this was that he was charged with third degree murder and manslaughter. And those of you, and this is speculation because I am not an attorney, but those of you that know anything about the law and the system and things like that, you understand that the procedure to charge an officer in this case shouldn't have been a pandering procedure. So what Mayor Jacob Frey did was he says, okay, we're going to fire these four police officers, which he did, but he should have waited until after one or all of them were charged. Since he did not do that, there's a high possibility, along with the coroner's report, that this police officer that's in custody will be released and walk, and the other ones won't be charged because of statutes and procedures that were not followed by the mayor or city of Minneapolis officials. With that said, we have a huge challenge here in the Twin Cities that we have to address, and we also have a bigger challenge. One thing I want to say while I'm looking here, I am multitasking. Sorry if I look away. I'm actually running the computer because our producer could not get over here in time due to what's going on in Minneapolis. Our call-in number, I want to say, share this. Our call-in number is 347-426-3904. Again, that number is 347-426-3904. We actually have a caller already. Let's see what the caller, 2192, you're live on Our Black News. Do you have a question or comment? Caller, 2192, do you have a question or comment you'd like to share? Okay, I will put you back in the queue. Thanks for calling. Again, that number is 347-426-3904. 347-426-3904. Let's talk about this real quick. Why in our communities, especially in the Black community, do we burn down, you know, stuff around us? I attest this from generational training. protests, but there's a lot of hidden nuances in this particular well-organized, well-structured burning down of building. Yesterday, I have a Speedway, formerly SA, really close to where I live, and so I'm going to go by and get some coffee. And when I got there, the windows were busted out, and someone had set the place on fire. Drove to another Speedway. It was boarded up. Drove to a Holiday gas station down the street. This is off Snelling in the Snelling-Hamlin University area. All these buildings are boarded up. The grocery stores are boarded up. The anything where you would get sustenance is boarded up. My challenge with that is our city leaders in Minneapolis and St. Paul don't have a plan, don't have a clue. Because if you're going to take away these options from people that live in the neighborhood or people that frequent those facilities, you have to open up more options. And it's really terrible that this did not happen, that you know, we're just going to shut everything down as what seems to me as a punishment for protesting. We're going to lock the stores. We're going to board them up. I understand. I get it. I understand. No one should be killed like that on video, and it's shown all across the world. And you have leaders in different countries saying, hey, wait a minute. Don't talk about us in China. You guys kill black men, your law enforcement, by, you know, at will. And so all this stuff is going on, and it seems like the politicians are stuck in stupid. We haven't heard from Rena Moran, State Representative Rena Moran, except for social media postings, and that includes Senator Jeff Hayden, Senator Bobby Joe Champion, and what I don't understand is that, okay, there's social media. The president uses social media to his advantage all the time, and these politicians are posting, but we need real words. You know, real things said to the community. I watched a press conference with the mayor of St. Paul, the Honorable Melvin Carter, and it was like a fly-by-night. There was no structure. There was no message. There was other than, you know, the DFL talking points, you know. There was no passion. I watched the mayor of Atlanta yesterday, who also had a press conference, and she was on point. Her message to the people burning down things in Atlanta is that Mr. Floyd, this is not what he'd want. It's not for us to decide what Mr. Floyd would want or what he would not want because he's dead now. But I understand in order to get justice, we have to do things a little bit differently because we're not in the state legislature. We're not at the table. We're not at the Minnesota Department of Health. We're not at MnDOT. We're not at the Minnesota Department of Administration. All these places that Minnesota Department of Education too, we're not in these rooms when these decisions are being made. So what happens is that decisions are made, they're placed on the black community, and they're not in the best interest of the black community, which is unfortunate. But that's been going on in Minnesota a long time, and it's unfortunate. But what do we do to change? I don't want you guys to be upset with these young kids out participating because there's an agent provocateur somewhere in there that's actually starting the fires. It's well organized. From St. Paul to Roseville to Minneapolis to the surrounding suburbs, I actually drove yesterday about 15, 20 minutes out from where I live in St. Paul, and a lot of things were shuttered and boarded up. And people are fearful of losing their businesses and their livelihoods. But then again, the state of Minnesota has already, you know, shut down businesses. Restaurants that have been in existence for as long as I've been alive are closing permanently. This is part of the Governor Walz's plan and that his administration and the city and the mayor's plan to kind of break the back, I think, of people. That's my opinion. So with that said, we have huge issues here in the Twin Cities that we need to address. And, you know, if burning down things is getting attention, so be it. Another thing I have a problem with, though, in all this is a lot of the race baiting that's going on. I watched a press conference yesterday on, I think it was on, like, YouTube, and it was with some community leaders here, which I'll leave unnamed because it's not really big deal. But they sat there, and one of the young ladies said, you know, I don't care if Target burns. Target should be out in the street. I can agree with that. She didn't care if a couple other things happened. But when you put or pit a group of people against another group of people, that's not going to really work out well for anyone. So with that said, how can we get to solutions that might work? How do we change policy at the state level to make sure that we are, or we get our fair share, which hasn't happened for many years now? The call-in number, again, is 347-426-3904. Again, that number is 347-426-3904 if you have any questions, comments, or concerns. I don't understand, you know, the policy. Let me back up. So the mayor's going to fire this police officers or these police officers before they're charged. And they're only going to charge them with third degree, that one police officer with third degree murder. If you know anything about the law and how this is going to work, this police officer is more likely to walk than be convicted. It was a misstep by Mayor Jacob Frey, by his administration, by the city attorney's office to fire them and then watch the process. Now, I think everybody that's watching or listening has looked at the statement by the coroner's office, which kind of clears the officer of wrongdoing. And that's not right. That's a problem. And we need to make sure that, you know, there's some kind of justice here where there is not right now. We do have a caller, and my producer working remotely says this is Mr. M from his palatial palace in South Minneapolis. Mr. M, welcome to the show.
Well, good morning, Don. Good morning, Don. This is a day of great, great sorrow in our great city, and you've really ran it down well. What's really going on? But I think, boy, this is a time. For some reason, I think of two people when these things happen. I think of my dad, and I think of Mr. Edwards. I think of somebody who really put this thing. You know, at least give us some idea of what we are experiencing right now, because a lot of this. There's so many moving parts here. This goes
yes.
back to, as Mr. Edwards could really tell you, this goes back to the rancid operations of the Minneapolis police as you go back to the days of Dolan and the Mill City Five. And yes. and this rancor continues to infect this police force.
Yes.
The current chief, as you know, he had to sue for his job in the Mill City Five. And they wanted to get rid of the black officers back then. And
yes, they did.
There's an undercurrent that I see, you know, as a resident here, of resentment to, you know, the chief. There's an undercurrent of just mayhem with the Minneapolis police. So their response, you know, I mean, there's so many moving parts here. It's really hard to put your hand on what is really going on. I mean, because it's not really, in my mind, a Democratic or Republican thing. It continues to be a black and white thing. And
yeah.
Until the city begins to address these things, until they begin to address, you know, especially with the police force, we see the tepid reaction. And then now all these outsiders, and I think the world sees what is really going on here, and it's the opportunists that are coming in here. As I said, I've lived here my whole life, Don. I don't know one black person or one white person that would behave like this to this city, that doesn't care about the city. So I don't know where we go from here.
Let me ask you a question. And I'm glad you called in. You always call in, and I appreciate that. And I don't have a co-host today because he lost his voice because he's been out on the street for 4 days. But that's Jonathan Mason, and we appreciate him.
He's all right. He's out here battling this thing, so I hope he's all right.
He just can't talk. He lost his voice. But let me ask you something here since I have you here. Jesse Jackson, Al Sharpton, Jamie Foxx come to the Twin Cities. I don't understand the purpose of that at all whatsoever. And they told me some people that were really close to Jesse Jackson said that, you know, they had to take him home to the hotel because he had to take a nap. And Al Sharpton was staying in a very nice hotel suite downtown Minneapolis. And I don't understand why Al Sharpton or Jesse Jackson was even brought to or came to Minneapolis or St. Paul for this, because what could they possibly do? You know, I'd like to hear your thoughts on that. I mean, I respect them as civil rights leaders in the past, but this is a new day. How those kids, those youth that are burning down buildings, robbing Foot Lockers, Sprint stores, Verizon stores, Targets, they're not familiar with the history or the canon of a Jackson or a Sharpton. And if they were, I'm not too sure they would even respect it. I mean, what are your thoughts about them coming to town? Why did they come to town? What was the purpose other than some photo ops? And we've seen those on social media. What are your thoughts, Mr. M?
Well, my thoughts first on those is, I guess I'll echo your first question. You know, why did they come here? Were they brought here? Did someone organized? I mean, were they here at the invitation of someone, the mayor or whomever, or did they just come on their own for an opportunity? Their usefulness for this, I mean, I don't see really what, you know, they're here, they show up at these things, and maybe it puts a stamp on that this is really important because they're here. I mean, I don't. But I really don't know, because I can't see how they could do anything to really help the situation. And I'm assuming that someone brought them here. I mean, if they're staying in posh hotels and they're, I'm thinking this must be some type of, they just brought them up here for basically show. I mean, you say, what can they do? Does this generation really, you know, relate to a Jesse Jackson and an Al Sharpton now? Is this something that, you know, have we moved past that? And they're kind of hanging on like aging movie stars or the old aging wrestlers that become dirty. They're clean when they start off and then they're dirty when they get old. They can't do anything anymore. So I don't know.
Yeah, and you're absolutely right, Mr. M, because, I mean, I don't have enough information to say yay or nay. They were brought here. They came on their own for the opportunity. I don't know that for those particular sets of metrics. But the thing is, you have an ongoing historical challenge here in the Twin Cities and the state of Minnesota as it pertains to Black people in general. The historical assumptions are crazy. Example, I stood in line yesterday at Kowalski's Markets, one of the only grocery stores open in St. Paul. And the woman in front of me clutched her purse, kept turning around, looking at me. I was more than 7 feet away from her. And, you know, I wanted to say something, but then again, I said, you know what, I don't want to start this. This is her problem in her head. This is not my problem at all whatsoever. So I'm going to let her deal with this in her mind. But how can we get to a point where this rancor and these historical assumptions about Black folks in Minnesota are moved away, and how do we stop this infrastructure? Okay, Mr. M, you and I are both Black Americans, okay, born and raised here. Why is it that this state moves away from the Black Americans and moves to others that are Black but not Black American to promote them, to saturate them, to make sure that they have everything they need as long as they play by the rules? And it's turning into a political mess because we don't have the foundation to make sure that we have what we need and that others, we could bring others along. I don't understand that. I don't understand why, you know, Governor Walz, Fry, and Carter are doing press conferences on Facebook and television this morning, and there's no solutions brought forward. You have to bring a solution forward. One of the things that I was thinking, Mr. M, is that why doesn't the city of St. Paul and the city of Minneapolis bring back the neighborhood youth corps and start employing these folks from 14 years old to 21? If you remember back in the day in South Minneapolis, almost every kid had a job within neighborhood youth corps, NYC they called it.
Yeah.
And there wasn't a lot of people in the streets. There wasn't a lot of killings, and kids were going home, getting up the next morning all summer, going to work every 2 weeks. They had a paycheck. So there was an opportunity to teach financial literacy. There was an opportunity to teach banking, savings, responsibilities, time management, and all this other stuff that really needed to be there and to make things happen for us. And I thank God for that experience as a young buck here in Minneapolis and St. Paul. But our kids don't have that today. And it's unfortunate because now we're seeing the results. And again, I'm going to say this. I said this at the top of the show. I don't want you guys to be upset with our young black youth, you know, following other folks in the building, setting fires and doing what they do, because, you know, you cannot be what you do not see. And what they're seeing now is people doing this, and so they're mimicking what's happening.
Yeah,
I'm
holding
them
Yeah,
go ahead.
Well, no, I was just going to say, I mean, I worked on those programs, those summer programs. Every year I had to save up some money for my school clothes for the next year. You know, and it was a routine that we were able to participate in. But what really grieves me here is when you look at different nationalities or cultures that are here in the Twin Cities. I don't hear about disparities of the Asians. I don't hear disparities among the Hmong community. I don't hear all these disparities where their education is bad. My granddaughter is Hmong, half Hmong.
Okay.
We went through, when my son connected with the mother, they had a reception over on the east side of St. Paul at a place that used to be, Don, you probably would never go into this place. It used to be called the Pain Reliever. Now, that's the place, Don, I'm sure you're appalled by that, but...
No, I've been, trust me, I've been in the Pain Reliever.
Okay, but we went to this thing, and it's now an event center. And the Hmong family, they own the building. They own the building where you can have events there, okay? Then they had a shower for my granddaughter at a restaurant that they own out on White Bear Lake, okay? And so I don't hear any disparities about these folks. I mean, I got to know this culture. I mean, the grandmother lives there. The grandmother's sister, they're together. They're all, the kids all go to school. I mean, there's different generations of children in the home. But they're organized on their own to do things. And I just think we've lost, when we came up here, the generation from the South, they came up here as a group of people for a better way of life, period. They didn't come up here to spread trouble. They didn't come up here to, there were jobs here. Sure, there was redlining and discrimination, but they could save their money. They used to say it takes two jobs to make one good one. They had no problem working and then working a second job. Almost everybody I knew, you take Ken and Norm, they owned the liquor store.
I remember that.
I knew both of those gentlemen. Matter of fact, Ken's wife and my dad graduated from high school in Chicago together. But those guys worked as postmen, and then they ran their business after that. They worked.
Yep.
They worked the system. They worked. They worked on what was available to them. And so this has been, for some reason, that has been taken out of us. It's like when my dad, you know, when I started at Child Protection, I told my dad about it. He said, you know what? Being parents and being family, that's been bred out of us. They tried to breed that out of us, okay? We're separated. We were, people didn't know their mothers, didn't know their fathers. They didn't have the opportunities to do things. But the minute they did, they began to do better. The minute they had the opportunity.
Yes.
And so this is what has to happen. The opportunity has to be created again. The opportunity has been lost. And I don't know, like you say, the neighborhood youth corps. I worked summer jobs every year. I worked at Honeywell. I worked at Control Data. I worked at the Northwestern Bell. Every summer I had a job.
Okay.
It's not available.
And you're absolutely right. I remember those days, and there's opportunities. Hang with me real quick here. We have a couple more phone calls. Caller 4644, you're live on Black News. Can I help you?
You know, it's funny you make that mention about those other ethnic groups, especially Somalians. Now, you do have some Somalians up there in an area they call Little Mogadishu. But I knew the gentleman that started the African Development Center, and he's passed away now.
Mm-hmm.
And what they've done. The Nigerians and also Africans have a higher educational attainment than Asians in the United States. And some Nigerian families have a higher income family-wise, household-wise, than whites and Asians also. So what happened to the black Americans? You know, now this is a different thing, this event. I think this was a hit myself, but we're not going to talk about that. But with all the hoopla over this person's death, now I don't condone and I feel sorry for the death. But last weekend, Memorial Day weekend, you had 119 shootings in 5 cities, 49 in Chicago alone, and 29 deaths. In Baton Rouge, you had 3 white cops shot, 2 killed by black males. St. Louis, you had a white cop executed by black males.
Yep.
Where's the news? So what I'm trying to say is, there's something going on. We know the news, what it does. There's some other things going on. And another point, you made mention of the blacks that have done well. Well, that's the way it is. Everybody's not going to do good, but surely it should be more than what's now. And black children don't wake up in the morning wanting to fail. Black society, with the lack of families and so on, is letting these kids down. And we have to come to terms and just say that's what it is and realize it. It's nothing mysterious. The three of us have been living long enough that we should be able to look at the picture and tell it what it is.
Okay.
That's all I got.
Thanks for the call. And we're going to continue. With stuff that happens here in this city, and now you get a panoramic view of destruction, of race baiting, of central hate that is pushed forward to an agenda. You know, Em, you've been around long enough. You know, if Mr. Edwards was here right now, he would tell us that this is the way a few of us in our community set up the system to get paid. They said we could solve this. We can make sure that no more of these black youth go into these stores. But we're going to need $1.5 million. We can make sure folks get a better education. But we're going to need $1.5 million. We're going to make sure that that these kids are helped with distance learning. But we're going to need $1.5 million. You know, there's a string attached. And when you look at it and you look at the background of some of these groups, and that's why I'm so frustrated, because we have the city of Minneapolis, the city of St. Paul, giving these old has-beens all this money to go out and corral black Americans. I didn't say Somalis, I didn't say Asian, I didn't say Hispanic, Latino. To go out and corral the black folks and put them in some kind of box. And it's not working. It's not happening for either side. This is not a successful way to benefit anybody. And it's very interesting, Em, you talked about your in-laws, your people there, your granddaughters, folks. You know, other cultures have been able to come into Minnesota and do phenomenal work.
Yeah, yeah.
Own businesses, operate everything, financial, currency, commerce. And And I don't understand. I don't have the answer of why we burn down our own communities that we live in. I don't have the answer of why black Americans, blacks, more specifically black Minnesotans, are not doing better. It seems like in some way, somehow, we continue to protest, be it Facebook, be it letters to the governor, and nothing seems to get done. And I'm not being a Republican today, I'm not being a Democrat, but I'm going to stay right in the center today. And I'm going to look at both sides critically and just say there's a huge issue in black Minnesota that we need to address. Because, number one, the kids aren't in school. And I attest that if they were in school, this rioting would have been down a couple ticks. Because we have them in front of us. Right now, they have nothing to do. They don't know how to respond to all this craziness going on. I mean, a 14-year-old kid, their biggest thing, or one of their biggest things, is going to school with their new Jordans on so they can get compliments. Oh, those are tight. Those are tight. They don't have that outlet. So now what are we going to do? We're going to go help burn down some buildings because we saw an adult with a mask and a hood on. Bust windows at AutoZone, set it on fire. Then you watch these folks run in and steal from loot AutoZone, loot Foot Locker. And you worry about the future of our kids. I mean, what do we tell them? I mean, how far does this have to go before, the police or National Guard start doing things they shouldn't be doing to these kids? And our people.
Well,
and that's my
concern. I'm like you. I'm just as perplexed as you are, Don. But the thing is, money is not going to solve the issue the way they're spending it. The money is a resource. I'll give you an example. Back in the 60s, when they tore up Plymouth Avenue, which was another travesty because people don't realize Plymouth Avenue was a business district. Okay, there was businesses all up and down, a lot of them owned by blacks. There's some Jewish businesses, but there was a business. It's all gone now. It's dissipated. It's not there anymore.
Mm-hmm.
And what they did, was the businessmen at that time, I'm talking about the Daytons, the Cargills, the people that really had the money, they just said they didn't want this to happen to their city. So they began to put – they are the ones that started these model cities and funded these kinds of things. They're the people that were participating in this. They came to the table, and they recruited blacks from around the country that were successful. I can tell you that they recruited a man. I'm not going to mention his name now. They brought him up here to manage the Phyllis Wheatley Center. That's how he got here. But they recruited him to come here to do that. See, the business people, they were more attentive to their city. These people now, they just, anybody that comes in, they're just looking at black people, we'll just give them some money and send them on their way. So they just keep coming to the trough. But business people, the people that have, the Daytons, the Targets, all this stuff, they need to really come together with some real people that really want to keep our city going. Really want to keep our city thriving, really want to keep our kids and the next generation thriving. But that's a big part that's missing, too. That's a very big part that's missing, too.
You're absolutely right, Mr. M, and the issues that are going on here are not new. They're by any stretch of the imagination. From 2005 till just this year, Mr. Edwards and I talked about all just a multiplicity of things that were happening here in the Twin Cities. And I had a young lady to send me an email and says that, you're talking about black people, you don't like black people, and, you're Uncle Tom, a sellout, and all this. And, I took it with a grain of salt because, some people are ignorant, straight up ignorant. I mean, what can you do? No, I don't hate black people. But what disturbs me is that let's just use names right now. Senator Bobby Joe Champion, Senator Jeff Hayden should be out front in the streets having these conversations with our people that are out there. They need police around them. That's fine. Do that. But when you make these suggestions that make sense, like bring back the neighborhood youth corps, like make sure that families in St. Paul from Dale Street, well, from Marion down to Snelling are okay, that we don't have families, a mother, father, son, and daughter on the corner of University and Snelling with a sign that says, I'm hungry, can you give us some money? You know, and I don't care if they're not using it to get food for their kids and family. Just the other day, I'm driving down the street, and there's a brother there with his wife and his two kids. She's holding a baby on the corner of Snelling and University. Do you know how bad that is? And you have the mayor of the city to get on television, on NPR and on television yesterday, and do what I call one of the driest, ununiformed, lack of content speech to the community that I've ever seen anywhere in history. There was no solution, you know, other than y'all need to stop, you know, let's stop burning buildings. We need peace right now. I'm sorry, we're past the point of this DFL pandering. We're way past that. And if it was Republicans pandering, I'd say the same thing. But we're past that point. We don't have enough going on where, you know, there's substance for people. There are people driving up talking about, I need diapers for my baby. I need formula. All these stores are closed. They're not even delivering on Instacart right now in St. Paul, Minneapolis. So if the leaders are going to demand or ask that these stores, these outlets be shuttered, what is the vision for the response that we need to make sure that people have what they need so they can survive? Right now, to me, Mr. M, it seems like a punishment. And we have another caller. Let's get that caller online here. Caller 1466 is your last four. What's your name and what's your question or comment?
Good morning, John. It's Rebecca White. How are you?
Hey, Ms. White, how are you? I'm doing fine. What's going on?
Listen, I just wanted to call in. First of all, I want to say that I appreciate you. I am following Jonathan because I saw him, here on your program, and I'm wishing him well as well. I just wanted to give some light on the coming together of Jamie Foxx and our local athletes surrounding Steven Jackson. Because I heard you comment on that earlier, the presence of your Jamie Foxx and your Al Sharpton and Jesse Jackson. I don't know a lot about the other. I do know some about the athletes coming together yesterday. Steven Jackson put a Instagram video out on Monday. It would be Tuesday, right after this tragedy, saying that he grew up with George Floyd and considered him a brother. That responded in a call to, obviously, the people who know and support him. So Jamie Foxx being here and a whole group of those people being here yesterday was the result of that. And I just think that one of the things, like the call before said, there's many moving parts here. Right. And going forward, we hope that everybody reflects on each moving part and what we can do different. One of the things that one of the positive lights that's happening here is that there are this generation of celebrities and specifically athletes. And I want you to know that many of our homegrown hometown athletes came together yesterday, black and white, to be a part of that piece of it. They wanted to show, they took a knee, how to protest peacefully. And moreover, I just want to say that we can see right now when we reflect back on the last few decades, which I appreciate you, that's why I follow you, because there's always a historical context to what's happening here, both you and Ron Edwards. Not every place that is discussing our social issues and the way we're impacted, or the way that we're impacted, is even considering the historical context. And I appreciate you that for that. But what I wanted to say is, you know, when this pandemic started and everything shut down, pro sports, yes, college sports, everything shut down across the board, which leaves ESPN with absolutely nothing to talk about, right? And what ends up happening is they run a Michael Jordan documentary. And absolutely everybody is talking about this documentary, basically, not because it's so damn interesting, really because there's nothing else to talk about. People have been distracted with nothingness about sports 24/7. There's several channels to tune into 24/7. And the documentary comes up, and what we see is that in reflecting, Michael Jordan has basically stood for nothing, right? And
true.
And so we're always processing that through his career, his greatness, the Air Jordan, the impact on Nike and the corporatocracy that's behind Michael Jordan. We're always thinking about that in relationship to him, the image that we bought into, but we're not thinking about it in the time span. What was going on in our world? What was going on in Chicago while he was there with that platform with nothing to say? And so I think what one of the disconnects here is that this generation, my son is 29 years old. He happens to be somebody who comes from here. We have a rich history, a very rich history in our community. My grandfather was one of the first black men employed by the St. Paul Police Department. And across the board, we just have a rich history, and he's very aware of it. He may be unique, though, to his age group when it comes to that. What I'm saying is that we have to think about what we haven't provided for this generation that needs to stand up and speak right now. And we weren't doing that. We weren't doing that. You and I, Don, we grew up when we were at home when our parents and our family members were watching the news daily. They were at home reading the newspaper. We were gathered around a dinner table. We knew how our family felt about what was happening in our community first. We weren't tuned into an electronic device listening to a bunch of nonsense. We knew how the people who mattered to us and were impacted the way that we were, we knew how they felt. That's not happening now. So I wanted to make sure that we really understand that there is an element here, as this public narrative happens, about outsiders coming in and burning buildings and that type of thing, that there is a new voice. And those athletes came together to say, you know what, we recognize our power with our platforms and what hasn't been happening. So I wanted to say that today, that anybody listening to the show that's here locally should feel proud that that happened. And if you weren't able to even see that piece because there was just so much unfolding yesterday, look for that. Mike Max has been covering it. It's probably up on his website, WCCO. There's some other Fox News coverage of it. The Jesse Jackson and Al Sharpton thing, I don't really know. I have the same questions you have. You and I probably feel the same way about that presence there. I will say that Eric Garner's mother came and spoke to the group at 38th in Chicago, and I appreciated her voice. I think we need to look for people who've been through what we're going through, and I think that was significant. I really do.
And I appreciate the call and comments, and it's very interesting when you look at put this in historical, and we have LaTanya here who's called in on Zoom. We're going to talk to her in a minute so she can explain some things. But when you look at it in the historical context of black Minnesotans, say, let's go from like 1960 to 1982, there was a lot of different systems created in the 80s, the early 80s, late 70s, early 80s, the nonprofit industrial complex came in, and some of our leaders that look like us figured out the game. They've been well funded for years. And I'm saying this in relation to Michael Jordan. We didn't have really a Michael Jordan here, but we had people here that were touted and celebrated by the mainstream, that at some point figured it out, and it no longer benefit. Anything that happened did not really benefit the community. Now, I'm not saying that the community was not benefited at all by any of this, but let me give you an example. And LaTanya, stand by, please. And I have to say this, I'm not demonizing any of these people, because these people, they have a hustle. And I respect that hustle. But at the same time, I don't care if you make $250,000 a year working for a nonprofit. Create some wealth for some people that you're supposed to be working with. You know, why are we going to give an agency in North Minneapolis over $50 million that deals with an achievement zone that is not achieving? Why are we going to have an empowerment zone in blighted areas in Minneapolis, North Minneapolis, St. Paul, around the state, and no one is empowered at all whatsoever? So we have these issues going on, these consistent or constantly rotating systems that aren't in the best interest for Black Americans. And I'm not trying to like be a pinhead or anything like that, but when I say Black Americans, I'm talking about Black folks that were born and raised in Minnesota. This is Minnesota specific right now, and also around the country. Because if there's an opportunity to ignore Black American, the state of Minnesota will like, boom, snap on it immediately. And say, look, we have the first this, the first that. They're black. But no, you've ignored for generations the Black Americans right here that will have the solution. I am perplexed by CNN, MSNBC, Fox News bringing all these Black people that don't live in Minnesota to interview them about what's going on here. I mean, I understand the ratings, and it's not news, it's style. So what happens when the psychological boxing gloves get so big that you can't fight back? With that said, LaTanya, I would like you to you've been going through some challenges with child protection, and I want to give you a minute or so to kind of capitalize it and let people know what's going on, because you provide the evidence, the source, and the meaning for a messed up Minnesota. Go ahead. Welcome to the show.
Good morning.
Good morning, ma'am.
I mean, I've done everything. Like I said, Minnesota politics, everybody wants to pass the buck. Nobody wants to say, everybody says it's somebody else's job to make sure that these laws and these statutes are being passed. But if it were tables were turned, they would be on me.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's kind of like you do everything that they ask you to do, and then you reach out to all the people that should be making sure that everything is done right. And those are all the people that say, well, I'm not prejudiced because I know somebody who has a Black friend. You know, and it's disgusting is what it is right now. And now just seeing this happen on Monday, it's kind of like, it really got to me, because I'm like, here they're taking our children and they're killing off our men. And where does that leave us for the next generation and the next generation? So, and then it's leading our children astray because they have no guidance. You just killed their father.
Yeah, you're correct. You're absolutely correct. So, Tanya, with that said, I've been reading your stuff and you've been posting about, you know, this child protection and what's going on. And we know in the state of Minnesota that your next door neighbor, the only evidence or qualifications they have to get you hemmed up with child protection is to be white and pick up a phone and call someone. And you're thrust into the system with no evidence at all whatsoever. But that's how a lot of these Minnesota agencies work. What do you think, in just your opinion, because there's a lot, we have a couple more callers. I'll get to you in about 2 minutes here. What are we going to have to do? Because we see the protesting. We see the buildings burning up. We see all this. But now, historically, we've been punished after this happens. Okay?
We are going to be punished.
So how do we make this different starting now?
I mean, tearing up our own communities, I'm not condoning that.
Okay.
I don't think we should be tearing up our own community. Okay. That's something also that's been taught all throughout the years, is that they want us to tear up our own stuff. They want us to have black on black crime. That makes things easier for them. less questions they have to answer.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Or less people they need to answer to.
Yeah. You're absolutely on point. And it's really funny because I was having this conversation with my wife yesterday, and she's from Washington, D.C., and it's a whole different kind of black supportive infrastructure out there. And she's never seen this kind of craziness among black people. But at what point, like, I hear all these brothers that are, you know, newspaper owners, supposedly black leaders say that we want unity in the black community. We want to work with this person. And then when you get there to the meeting, you figure it out that, you know, person XYZ has sold you out. And I say that to say that we have been racism, oppression, opportunities have been outsourced, you know, how can I put this? Racism has been outsourced to people that look like us now. Oppression has been outsourced to people that look like us right now. If Senator Bobby Joe Champion will not shake my hand in public, if Senator Jeff Hayden looks at me, I'm wearing a suit and a tie, I'm sharp as a tick, and he starts laughing, it doesn't affect me, but it shows me his insecurities. Okay?
I was just going to say that. You know, in black leaders now, what we need is somebody not to be afraid of who we can be, but somebody that wants to be all we can be.
Yeah, exactly. And I don't want you to be
and expect to walk and stand with him.
And I agree with you 100%. Stay with me. I have some calls here I want to get on here real quick. Caller 0171, you're live on Our Black News. What is your question or comment?
Well, Don, this is M again. My other phone went on the fritz, so I had to call back.
It sounds like you got some personal problems. No, I'm just kidding. Hey, Glenn, don't go in.
Yeah, but I do want to make a comment real quick. Okay.
Okay, go ahead. Go ahead.
No, I just want to say what the other caller was saying just makes all the sense in the world. I mean, it really takes a black and white focus on this, not just giving away money. And see, sometimes that people, Don, I think they really miss your intent on this. What people don't realize about you, Don, I'm going to just say something. I'm going to call you out. Don is an educator. He's a teacher. So what he's trying to do is trying to make you think. This is what a good teacher does, is to try to make you think. So when you leave the presence, you'll know what to do. You'll have an idea of what to do. And this is where we're missing so many people. We've talked about it, Don, the great Central High School, Joyce Jackson, all the teachers, all the coaches, that helped all of us get through. And this is what we're missing. We don't really have the real leaders that are really willing to do the down work with these kids, with the youth, because it's a different time. And when you say, you know, like Neighborhood Youth Corps and those things cannot come back in that the way they were then. They have to come back in a new, way. And this is where they haven't adjusted to come up. Just like technology changes, just like everything changes, the method of getting to these kids changes. And so this archaic way of teaching, this archaic way, we have to be able to modernize our approach to what we're doing with our youth and to what we're doing with our community.
And Em, you brought up something very important. Callers, I'm coming to you right after this statement. The technology. Like I said earlier at the beginning of the show, we can't be mad at these children because they don't know any other way to express themselves because they haven't been taught that. And you can't get you a laptop, a Chromebook, an iPad, and a phone, expect these kids to deal with emotions and events that they've never dealt with before. And they're not in class. So we can't say, like, hey, you know what, that's kind of weird, or explain the go take them to some Ralph Ellison and let them explain them a little bit more of the historical context going on.
Yeah.
Damn shame. Yeah. It's what's happening. Stand by. We have some callers here. Caller 7244 are your last four. What's your question or comment? Hello, caller, 7244. What's your name and what's your comment? Okay, they probably want to listen. We're going to put them back in the queue. There you go. And caller 3308 from Atlanta, what is your name and comment, please?
My name is Walter Trish, and my comment is that our president, Donald Trump, this is like Dr. King said, he just weeping what he sowed. He sowed divisiveness. He's so greed, and he's not helping black people at all in any way.
Okay, caller, let me ask you some questions, because I need to find out how you think, how you connect generational police brutality, the killing of Mr. Floyd and President Trump. Can you explain that?
Yes. You know, when Donald Trump was running for president, he made a statement that, hey, police officer, when you're putting your arrestee in the car, don't push his head down. Bump his head on the hood while you on the top of the car while you put him in the car. I mean, he used different statements like that to make you think it's okay what you do.
Okay. I understand what you're saying. Now, I've seen police do some really weird things to people and put them in the car before Donald Trump was president. And I'm not defending Donald Trump, but I want us as black people to take a very serious research look at what's happening, what's been happening, and not focus on one person who – this has been going on for generations. When Obama
right.
was in
I
office.
I agree with you. Yes,
you know,
I agree
like,
with you on
like,
that.
Like, let me just tell you one of the mistakes. What happens is that I was reading this report, and I heard some people talking about this, that, Trump has all these kids down in this – in the center in Mexico, and he kicked people out of the country, but no one said anything when Obama actually put more people out, deported more people than Trump ever has year to date. No one said anything. I'm not knocking Obama. I'm not knocking anybody. I'm just saying that sometimes we don't have the information that we need to be successful. And sometimes there are outlets out there that are putting information out because they know that black people will not read. You know, Richard Pryor, great comedian. He says, hey, if you want to keep your money safe, put it in a book and put it in the library in your house. If the robbers are black American, they're not going to go near the books. And so with all this said, I'm looking here, and in Minnesota, caller, we have the statute 119A. Minnesota Statute 119A. It talks about the duties and the rights of the Commissioner of Education and other agencies that, in a crisis, they can redirect funds. And we've been in a crisis here for education for many years, but there's been no redirection of funds. But yet we have people getting in line, getting $50 million here, $50 million there, and there's no positive outcome. I mean, again, I guess my question boils back to is how do we address this? What is the best way to address it? Do you have any suggestions, sir?
Well, I mean, it's not one way of dealing, of solving our problem. The answer is going to come from many different directions, you know. And I'm not down on policemen. I got two sons that are policemen. My older brother was a policeman for 30 years in Chicago. And so, I mean, I got policemen in the family. But as we know, all policemen are not good policemen.
Well,
you have some bad ones out there.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, agreed. Well, I'd like to thank you for your call this morning. Continue to listen, and we're going to continue to be live on the air. M and Latanya, how do we get back? Let me ask you this first. What do you think the responsibilities are of the mayors of St. Paul and the mayor of Minneapolis? And we're not demonizing them, but we're going to be critical. What are their responsibilities as of today, in your opinion?
Well, I would say, and there it looks like there's been an attempt at this today, because I saw them both at a press conference, but it's clear they need to work together because, see, Minneapolis and St. Paul, although they're two cities, they're just separated by the Mississippi River. I mean, this is not like I've got to go 50 miles away to get to St. Paul. I mean, St. Paul is – I can ride my bike to St. Paul. And so this is a community that they need to work together. And there's always been this veiled Minneapolis, St. Paul, Minneapolis, but it is all the same thing. And so they need to pool their resources. I mean, this is just an outsider's look. They need to pool their resources and address the issues in their communities because they're too close. I mean, these are probably two of the most close major cities. I mean, they're just right across. I mean, I can go across the street and be in St. Paul. Okay? Yeah. So this is what they need. They need to pool their resources and, you know, the education. There's no reason. Quick example, just on education. My little brother went to Washburn. Okay?
Yeah, but and I would like to see it. Let me interject.
Okay.
We have some breaking news. Mr. M, you remember Mr. Randy Statton. We are sad to announce he had passed away.
Really?
Mr. Randy Statton is deceased. Randy Statton, if you know anything about Randy Statton, he was in North Minneapolis. And I'm not praising him because we had words. But when someone's dead, you got to give them their honor. But Randy Statton was a go-to guy in North Minneapolis for different administrators, different politicians. I know that he received a lot of money to do a survey about businesses on Broadway Avenue that we have not seen to this day. But that's neither here nor there. But rest in peace. He's passed away. And we just want people to know that Randy Statton is dead.
I'm sorry to hear that because – you know, I knew Mr. Statton, you know, and he started out very, very well. You know, he played professional football, National Football League.
Yeah. Yep.
He started out very well. Yeah. The politician, you know, he started out very well, and they had really good intentions starting out. And it just shows how the shocks and strains of this money-mad society can affect even the most Puritan of hearts. And so this is what we're all up against, and I'm really, really, really sorry to hear that.
Yeah, and with that said, we have a lot of craziness going on in the city. And let me, Latanya, would you like to chime in at all?
Yes, I would like to.
Okay, please, please.
I really think, John, that being a leader in Paul or Minneapolis, they really need to educate themselves on the disparities and what they can do for all around community, not just one side.
I agree. I agree 100%. And here goes the thing. Back from 2005 to 2008, Mr. Edwards and I used to go to a lot of community meetings together. And at one point, Mr. Edwards says, you know what? He says, he doesn't even know. He says, I don't know why you're even going to these community meetings. Because we sit there like the tornado. Like the 2011 North Minneapolis tornado that came in and displaced a whole bunch of folks. And we watched over $1 million, maybe $2 million, was distributed to everybody except the tornado victim in North Minneapolis. Okay? I watched a guy get $5,000 to create a website for the tornado movement, and once he got the money, there was no contact again. And so I got the money. They didn't give me any money because I talked too crazy to them because, you know, you got to have respect, I guess, for the people with the money. But at this point, I watched him sell out the community so many times that it wasn't worth me taking that blood money to even do anything. But this has been going on in the black community, especially in that nonprofit industrial complex, for many years. I mean, what do you do, again, when the psychological boxing is so big that you can't combat it at all whatsoever?
Well,
that's unfortunate.
Money. Well, they have more money than they know what to do with it. They use money like Monopoly games. I mean, they can throw a little money out. They can come up with money when they want to. When they don't want to, oh, we don't have it. We can't fund this. We can't fund that. And they can give it to whom they want to, and they have to really figure out to give this and put the money in the right hands. But really, where we're at now, we're just in a huge, huge mess with a pandemic, with a 45 that is really not giving us any direction. And this, what's happening in Minnesota, this was just kind of a seed place to get this thing started, because it's going on all over the country now. This is not just happening here. They're shooting people in California. They're going down to Atlanta. They're all over the – this is a movement. This is a movement now. This is not about the gentleman – that got murdered in front of the Cub Food. It's not about that anymore. They have taken this thing to a whole new level, you know, with pandemics, with insurrection everywhere you look, protesters that are really not protesters, because when you talk about protesters, you know, Martin Luther King, I just get on my knees and thank God for that man, because he came in and said, we can do this, and we don't have no guns. He turned off the hoses and the dogs in Birmingham, Alabama, with words. With words. He didn't have no guns. He didn't need any. And what's so amazing about a guy like him and Malcolm X and some of these great blacks, they didn't even make it to 40 years old. They're dying in their 30s and 20s, and they've had so much impact. This just shows you what you can do with your life if we're allowed to do it. So this is a whole direction now. This is bigger. This is bigger than just here right now. We're in a whole mess right now.
Did any of you see the press conference with the mayor of Atlanta, Keisha Bottoms, yesterday, where she had T.I. and Killer Mike at the press conference? I don't know if some of you know, but Atlanta's a different kind of animal. There's a lot of black people in Atlanta. I love Atlanta. And there's an area in West Atlanta where T.I. and Killer Mike own one-third of the property and businesses in this area. And most of that is basically burnt to the ground this morning. And there was a passionate plea by the mayor of Atlanta, Ms. Bottoms, and also T.I. and Killer Mike, who asked that, hey, why are we – I mean, we know why. This Mr. Floyd watching a police officer kind of grinning and killing this man live on TV, we understand the anger. But we need to channel it, you know, we need to channel it in another way that we can make sure that our best interests are taken care of. I don't mean black people hating white people hating black people, et cetera, et cetera. Let's go to the state legislature and make things really happen. Let's work with our state senators and our state representatives to change policy that we don't like. That's the missing link. Because I'm going to tell you, I've been through some hell with a couple of things just teaching. And every time I call these people up and say, hey, but that doesn't make any sense. They say, well, you need to call your state legislator because these are the rules. Well, am I really going to call Rena Moran? Am I really going to call Betsy McCulloch? Am I really going to call who else is over here? I don't know who the representative is over here at the for the Senate. But I do know that they haven't done anything up to this point, especially in St. Paul. The light rail went in. People five blocks from either side of the light rail from Marion Avenue all the way up to Fairview not have any economic success from that light rail being put in, meaning that they weren't hired. MnDOT, the Minnesota Department of Transportation, And I got to tell you this because this is a historical context. They received millions and millions, like over $65 million at one point in just one grant from the feds to work on Minnesota bridges, roads, and other things in Minnesota. And out of that $63 million, they gave one black contractor $700. $63 million. One black contractor received an award for work for $700. It's not fair at this level. So how do we go? We need to go back in. But stop. Let me pause there, Em and LaTanya. We're supposed to have black community leaders that are aware of this, that go in and address these disparities. What's happening? Where is it? You know, I don't see it. I don't see any of our yellow, red, black, and white. I don't see any of our state legislators besides Mr. Senator Mark Graham and a couple others going in and making sure things are different. You know?
To be completely honest, Don,
yeah.
I sat at one of those tables where this was supposed to be discussed. And when we got to that table of negotiation, it wasn't about negotiating.
Mm.
Basically, they said, hey, this is what we've come up with. Just with it. African American Family Preservation Act that they basically just said that he said, here, deal with it. This is what we did. So we need them to have a basketball.
Yeah. And they don't. I remember back in 2013 or 14, it was called then the Council of Black Minnesota. The guy named Ed McDonald, who wrote over a $250 million package for the black community, that probably would have been passed if State Representative Rena Moran, Bobby Joe Champion, Jeff Hayden, and Carolyn Lane, all legislators, did not. They got upset that he went to Governor Dayton with this. And Governor Dayton was 100% on board. And so they got so mad at Mr. Ed McDonald that they rewrote the structure of the Council on Black Minnesota, changed the name to Minnesota Council of Minnesota with African Heritage, whatever, blah, 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 and told him he had to interview for his job. Re-interview. They never hired him. But that was his punishment for bringing the successful legislation, which they couldn't do for many years, to the government. You can't bypass us because we're like the mob and you got to come here first. And I'm going like, this is ridiculous. You have a guy working for a state agency that puts in over a $250 million legislative agenda for black Minnesotans, so we're never begging, we're never hungry, there's money in our pockets because we work for it. And the three people who look like us in Minnesota State Legislature blew them off, fired them, hired someone less qualified, which they continue to do, and we get nothing. So now we're at this point where we have our children, our people, our other people, actually more white people, out there in the streets burning things down. There's no vision. There's no vision. There's no foresight. There's nothing. There's no, you know, I don't understand this. And I get in the room and I start talking to them. They're not celebrities to me. Okay? They're elected politicians. Okay? So I might talk about their mama or their dad. Okay? I might say something that they're not accustomed to hearing. You know, in the boardroom or in the street, I don't care where they want to go. We can do it. But the thing is, if we continue, to let these folks, and I don't care if you're Republican, Democrat, whatever, it doesn't matter. But if we continue to let these folks work for us, we're going to get more of the same. Okay? I was looking the other day, I was reading this Star Tribune somewhere, this article that just, it was shameful that they were highlighting that students in St. Paul and Minneapolis are in their 20s as far as proficiency goes in reading and writing. LaTanya, Mr. M, myself, we know that 70% is a C. It ain't great, but 70% is a C. Our kids are down in the 20s. How can you sit there with a straight face and justify success at that it went from 21% to 25%. That's total BS.
Yeah, they can't. It's an abject failure. The Minneapolis
Urban League going to have a press conference. Is the black candidate running against Ilhan Omar going to have a press conference and talk to us about what's going on here? Where are the voices? Why is everyone so quiet? I know they're scared. You know, I know they're absolutely terrified. But where are the black men, M, and Latanya that we had back in the 60s and 70s that would go out in the streets?
Let's just fill the void here. I mean, we're missing the Matthew levels, the Harry Davis. You know, we're missing the people that have the credibility. I mean, they would go to Washington. They would go to the convention. They had to come through this community to get their votes. They had to come to us to get votes. They couldn't just pander. They had to actually come to us with a substance of a program. And that's what we're missing. We're missing that generation that worked together here. They disseminated it. This city and this state has really turned its back on black people. I'm talking about the black African Americans. They basically turn their back. You know, they see all the numbers, all the disparities, all this stuff is right there in front of their faces, and they do nothing. They don't lift a finger to do anything about it. They think that that's the way it's going to be, and maybe you'll just get out of here. I mean, that's what I don't see them putting any thought or process into helping black people.
Yeah, and I agree. And Latanya was just talking about, you know, what I was just speaking on. What did your mother and you, what did you guys end up, what was the conclusion you came up on as far as out of this conversation?
Well, my grandmother, I went and visited her just yesterday, and we talked about all the stuff that was going on. And she's been on the north side since the 20s.
Okay.
So, her family is a kid in the city. You know, she's been raised with the computer there.
Mm-hmm.
So, she's looking at it like, we need to take our family back. So, that's where it all really starts. To take our families back and take responsibility.
I'm listening. Your microphone, there you go. Continue. We didn't hear it because you were muted for a minute, so can you say that again, please?
Oh, we need to take our families back so that we can go ahead and educate and provide a future. That's our future. However you look at it, that's our future. And if we're not putting something into that, we're not going to get anything out of that.
You're absolutely right.
That's basically where she went. She said, I remember when your kids, they want us to keep the kids under control and this, that, and the other. And she just went on and on and on about how things used to be and how they are now. You know, people were, and they said, my brother is my brother. They really, truly felt that.
Yeah. And I apologize, we're getting a little bit of feedback here. It's okay. It's just things happen with Blog Talk Radio. We're actually plugged in broadcasting live on Blog Talk Radio and on Zoom and on Facebook Live, so you guys can see. You know, I usually didn't do this, but, you know, my mother said I had a face for radio, so we're just going to go ahead and do this here. Any technical difficulties, I'll apologize, ma'am.
Can I ask you a question?
Yes, you can.
I want to ask you a question, Don. Yeah. I mean, this city, center cities of Minneapolis and St. Paul have been tore up. You know, why don't they go out to Edina? Why haven't they gone out to Egan? Why haven't they gone out to Woodbury? Why haven't they gone out to the outlying suburbs? Why is it just concentrated right in the center city? Do you have any thoughts on that?
Great question. If you notice, they have been, and I was going to explain that. You know, as far as Brooklyn Center, Roseville, Shoreview, they've been out there. But think about this, Mr. M. What was the response the first night, the first 4 hours of the first night of rioting? The response from the city was to pull the plug on transportation.
Yeah. Okay.
the rail was shut down. Bus services shut down. So you have people concentrated and stuck. If they want to do damage, they're going to have to do damage within the areas where they start where they started at. That's why the malls are the University Midway area. University Midway area is a weird piece of work because that area is on the schedule to be gentrified. Okay, and let me explain what happened. All the from the Enterprise Rent-A-Car to Gordon Park, my first job in St. Paul, they burnt, you know, they broke the windows and burned a little bit in the lunchroom there. All that stuff has put this on the back burner. My greatest fear is that the city of St. Paul walks away from the University Midway area and it starts to look like Baltimore, Maryland. Mm-hmm. Right now, Baltimore, Maryland.
Detroit.
In Detroit. And so if they decide to walk away from this area and not invest and make the area better, another ghetto created, man-made, of course, as a punishment for this protesting. I mean, there's a lot of burn. The pharmacy. The funny thing is, the pharmacy over here, and I'm answering your question here, Mr. M, the pharmacy on, Minnehaha and Snelling, you know, there are people that broke into the pharmacy. And stole whatever they stole and then burnt down the pharmacy. Family business. Been there for as long as I can remember. I mean, I was a kid and we drove by that building. And it was very a shame that that happened, but what do you do? What do you do? How do we fix the infrastructure? No one's going to give LaTanya, Don, or Mr. M any money to do anything ever. Period. Not that we need money. Maybe if we had a larger voice. Maybe if we could reach more people. Maybe if we could get to our people to even listen. But they, the state, the counties, the cities, they have well-trained house pets. Talking about house Negroes, that they can do whatever they want and flush out cash to them, and we still have the same situation. Now, the white people that are listening, I don't want you to be upset with any of us, okay? It's not your problem. This is our problem. It's not, as Mr. Tucker would say, it's not them, it's us. Because when we get into the room, someone would say, oh, wait a minute. I know you're not going to LaTanya's restaurant, if she owned a restaurant, because her ice cubes aren't as cold as Mr. M's ice cubes. You know, and we have people in our community that will not think, well, things freeze at 32 degrees, so either LaTanya's refrigerator or freezer is not working, or this person who's telling me this is an idiot. And usually it's the second. The person who's telling you this is an idiot, okay? And we do so much to deflect and pivot between each other, you know. I don't care. Again, I don't care, nonprofit leader. You're making $150,000, $250,000 a year. That's your business. You got a great hustle. Continue your hustle. But make sure there's some people that are actually benefiting from that hustle other than yourself. And we watched millions and millions of dollars being poured into St. Paul, poured into Minneapolis, poured into surrounding suburbs. We watched schools fall flat on their face because they have too many immigrants or they have not enough teachers or not enough this. And we can't talk. Senator Michelle Benson is a white female senator. She doesn't even represent the inner city, but she is so cool. One day she told me, I was talking to her in person. She goes, Don, she goes, here's the deal. We sign off on this legislation for funding. It goes to the House. Then it goes to the governor. The governor signs off on it. And she said, we never know what happened if it was successful. Case in point, back in 2011 or 12, the Minneapolis Urban League, which is now the Urban League of the Greater Twin Cities, said that they were going to start a 13th grade. That was going to be the solution to our black kids having such failing rates in reading, math, and science. We're going to do this 13th grade. Now, the person who actually came up with the 13th grade had an office inside of the Minneapolis Urban League. So they virtually ignored her, and they went to the state legislature, and they managed to pull off something worth somewhere between $600,000 and $900,000. And I was asked personally, what happened? Where is the 13th grade? What happened to that money? Did you get the money? How was the money used? Because if you remember, Mr. M and LaTanya, the Urban League had a high school and an elementary school.
Well,
they had half of it and all kinds of and
well,
nothing.
But the whole concept, I mean, dying as an educator, I mean, 13th grade, I mean, by the time that these kids need to be pushed, by the time they get to the 13th grade, they could have already had an associate's degree. They could have already had gone to a trade school by that time. They could have already been an apprentice. But, you know, and that's another thing. The trades used to, they used to come to the high schools, but they took all of that out. You know, North High School had a great auto mechanic program. Awesome auto mechanic.
I remember
program.
That. It was routing students right at Dunwoody.
They tore it out of there. They took it right out of there. You know, they took that right out. They've got rid of vocational high school. They got, you know, the educational wheel is so behind the times. You know, I mean, it takes just like the whole political thing. It's behind the times. Mm-hmm. And it's like a big, what was that ship that went down? Whatever that big boat that went down, the Titanic. It takes them too long to do anything. Takes too long to do anything, and they just wait you out, and they just dawdle, and they spend and throw away the money before they really put it where it needs to go to make progress. I'm really afraid for our Twin Cities right now. I mean, I don't see anyone all the way up to the governor that really seems to have a handle on what this is, a more diverse state and cities, the Twin Cities, than they have been, and they just don't seem to be able to adjust to it. Don't seem to be able to say, hey, we've got to get into the 21st century now.
Yeah,
but,
and I want you guys to listen to, we have about 3 more minutes left of the show. I'd like to thank LaTanya and Mr. M for hanging out with me, and hopefully Jonathan Mason is back with us next week. But I want you to listen to Killer Mike here in closing and what he had to say at the press conference with the Atlanta mayor yesterday.
I do want to come. Don't be here. Here's the last one, please, officer. And my other cousin, East Point, please, officer. And I got a lot of love and respect for police officers. I didn't want to have to become a police, had to dress in a YMCA because white officers didn't want to get dressed with niggers. And here we are, 80 years later. I watched the white officer assassinate a black man. And I know it's poor. And I know it's Christian. And I have nothing positive for this moment. I don't want to be here. But I'm responsible to be here because it wasn't just Dr. King and people dressed nicely who marched and protested to arrest this city and so many other cities. It was people like my grandmother, people like my aunt, authors, who were members of the SCLC and NAACP, and in particular, Reverend James Orange, Mrs. Alice Johnson, and Reverend Law, who we just lost last year. So I'm duty-bound to be here to simply say that it is your duty not to burn your own house down for anger with an enemy. It is your duty to fortify so that you may be a house of refuge in times of organization. And now is the time to plot, plan, strategize, organize, and mobilize. it is time to beat up prosecutors who don't like at the voting booth. It is time to hold mayoral offices accountable, chiefs and deputy chiefs. Atlanta is not perfect, but we're a lot better than we ever were, and we're a lot better than cities are. I'm mad as hell. I woke up wanting to see the world burn down yesterday. I'm tired of seeing black men die. He casually put his knee on a human being's neck for 9 minutes and died like a zebra in the clutch of a lion's jaw. And we watch it like murder porn over and over again. So that's why children are burning to the ground. They don't know what else to do. And it is the responsibility of us to make this better. Right now, we don't want to see one officer charged. We want to see 4 officers prosecuted and sentenced. We don't want to see targets burned. We want to see the system that's up for systemic racism burnt to the ground. And as I sit here in Georgia, Thomas Stevens, Georgia, former vice president of the Confederacy. White man said that fundamental law stated that whites were naturally the superior race, and the Confederacy was built on a cornerstone. It's called a cornerstone speech. Look it up. The cornerstone speech that blacks would always be supported, that officer received that speech because he killed that man like an animal. In this city, officers have done horrendous things, and they have been prosecuted. This city's cut this. In this city, you can find over 50 restaurants owned by black women. I didn't say minority, and I didn't say women of color. So after you burn that home, what do you have left but char and ash? CNN? Ted did a great thing. I love CNN. I love Cartoon Network. But I'd like to say to CNN right now, karma's a mother. Stop feeding fear and anger every day. Stop making people feel so fearful. Give them hope. I'm glad they only took down a sign and defaced a building and they're not killing human beings like that policeman did. I'm glad that they only destroyed some brick and mortar and they didn't rip a father from a son. They didn't rip a son from a mother like the policeman did. When a man yells at his mother in duress and pain, and she's dead, he's essentially yelling, please, God, don't let it happen to me, and we watch that. So my question for us on the other side of this camera is, after it burns, will we be left with char, or will we rise like a phoenix out of the ashes that Atlanta has always done? Will we use this as a moment to say that we will not do what other cities have done, and in fact, we will get better than we've been? We got good enough to destroy cash money. You don't have to worry about going to jail for some petty. We got smart enough to decriminalize marijuana. How smart are we going to get the next 15 or 20 years to keep us ahead of this curve? So that much like when South Africa suffered apartheid, you had Andy and other politicians that could make sure that Atlanta said, Coca-Cola, we love you, but if you don't pull out of South Africa, we're going to leave. We're not going to drink Coca-Cola anymore. Coca-Cola jumped on their side, and apartheid ended. So we have an opportunity now because I'm mad. I don't have any good advice. But what I can tell you is that if you sit in your home tonight instead of burying your home to the ground, you will have time to properly plot, plan, strategize, and organize and mobilize in an effective way. And 2 of the most effective ways is first taking your butt to the computer and making sure you fill out the set so that people know who you are and where you are. The next thing is making sure you exercise your political bully power and going to local elections and beating up the politicians that you don't like. You got a prosecutor sent your partner to jail and you know bullshit. Put a new prosecutor in there. Now's your election to do it. You want a different senator that's more progressive that beats marijuana through? Now is the time to do that. But it is not time to burn down your own home. I love and I respect you. I hate I don't have more to say. I hate I can't fix it in a snap. I hate Atlanta's not perfect.
Well, we'd like to thank everybody for listening today. That was Killer Mike from Atlanta. You know, Killer Mike and T.I. own about 1/3 of the West Side in Atlanta. And it's unfortunate that, you know, this stuff, we're burning down our places where we buy groceries. And, of course, the city of Minneapolis and city of St. Paul have no idea how to respond. It's kind of like I feel it's a punishment, and it's unfortunate, and we have to use one of the things that we have, which is the vote, and we need to take these people out of office. And I'm not saying one side is better than the other. I'm just asking you as listeners, as viewers, or wherever you are, to make sure that you get that list and you talk to these people that are running for office, especially us black people that have black people in office. You need to start asking them some hard questions in public. Don't let them message you to death, because it's a lot of BS. We need to go ahead and make sure that our agenda is front and forward, and that we're getting what we need, not what they want to give us. And that's been going on for far too long. With that said, I'd like to bring James Brown on. Thank you for listening and watching.
Put your bad stuff.
We'll be back next week.
Bad
Johnson
loud.
Bacon.
Bad loud.